And through the looking glass, which includes the famous character Alice and a queen, the queen says, "I'm just 101, 5 months and a day." To which Alice says, "I can't believe that." "Can't you?" says the queen in a pitying tone. "Try." Alice laughed. "There's no use trying," she said. "One can't believe impossible things." "I dare say you haven't had much practice," said the queen. "When I was your age, I always did it for half an hour a day. Why, I sometimes believed as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast." Jesus coming back to life, that's an impossible thing, isn't it? It's an impossible thing to believe. And it's something that happened before breakfast. Why believe something that seems to be impossible? That seems to be something that couldn't possibly happen. Couldn't possibly have happened. Why would you believe an impossible thing that happened before breakfast? Well, it could only be because there is some evidence. Christians aren't people who just concentrate for an hour a morning of thinking of impossible things that they might believe. Christians believe based on some evidence. So we were thinking with the children earlier about the magnifying glass and looking for clues. And that's what we're going to be doing this morning, looking together for some clues, some evidence about Jesus being risen from the dead. So we're going to have to hurry to the tomb and have a look. Now, I was going to bring some of these kind of eggs. What kind of eggs are these called, children? Yes? Kinder Surprise. And I was going to have some little clues inside those eggs. But the trouble with those eggs, you know what the problem with those eggs is? They're covered in chocolate. So we'd have loads of chocolate, and that would be such a problem, wouldn't it, really? So I'm not bringing those, but I have got some other eggs, which don't have any chocolate included. And I think I better get down here to make it easier. In fact, I think I better reorganise myself down here to make it especially easier. There we go. What's that? Yeah, I know, I could see that. I was there. I saw it after I'd moved, but I did see it. And thought, that's good, I kept it upright. So, we've got some clues. Now, all I need to do is make sure I advance this properly so I get the right egg out each time. Okay, here's my first egg with a clue in it. And it's all connected with what we read from the Bible this morning. But here's my egg with the clue in it. And I wonder if one of the children would like to open the egg and see what's in it. Yes, you put your hand up first. Oh, you dropped it. What's inside? Stone. There's a stone inside. Shall I take that away? You can keep the other bit to fiddle with, but better hold on to the stone. Here's a stone. Looks something like that. There's a little interesting thing for photographers to know that that is the inside of the thing, but it looks like it's going outwards, doesn't it? It's a little optical illusion. It's going inwards, but it looks like it's coming outwards from inside the egg. Don't know why that is, but there we are. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's just my eyes. Well, the first thing then, the first clue is the stone. And we're starting our story at the tomb where Jesus was buried. There's a lady, Mary Magdalene, there, probably with some other women, although they're not mentioned in John, they're mentioned in some of the other books. And they arrive at the tomb and they discover what? What do they discover when they arrive at the tomb? Anyone want to tell me? Anyone from Causeway Group can tell me? Anyone from any group can tell me, but start with the children. Any children want to tell me what happened? What did they discover? She discovered particularly. Yes? The stone had been rolled away. So that's why we've got a stone as a clue. The big stone had been rolled away. Now, I've got a question for anybody, but maybe the adults. How many people does it take to lift an average-sized car? Yes, Nathan, you want to answer? 7. Probably. That's not an unreasonable number. This person here, I know he's only lifting one end of the car, but there is a person here who's sort of lifting half a car as one person. Probably the stone that was in front of Jesus' tomb was big and heavy, And probably it would need maybe three or four people with some tools, some levers to move it. It wouldn't have looked exactly like that, but maybe something a little bit like that. That's what the tomb might have looked like, where maybe if you flick the light off at the back, it's a bit complicated, but the little rocker switch, if you push the bottom of the rocker switch down, might mean you can see the photos a bit easier. Give it a push. Just give it one push. That's it. Perfect. So it might have looked a little bit like that, with a stone that was in a groove. And actually, because you kind of dropped the stone into the groove, it was much harder to get it out than it was to put it in the first place. And also, we know from other people who wrote about Jesus that there were guards in front of the tomb. So something very unusual must have happened. Mary arrives and the stone has been rolled away. What can have happened? How can Jesus have rolled the stone away, especially if he's dead? But how could he have rolled it away on his own anyway? And how could they have got past the guards? So the first clue is the stone. Now the second piece of evidence. It's got a little furry bit on the front, that's the one. Everyone want to open this one? It's tricky to see whose hand went up first. And what's inside that one? Nothing at all. Why do you think there's nothing inside that one? Because Jesus wasn't there. Because the tomb was completely empty. Not completely empty, as we'll see in a moment, but empty of the body of Jesus. There was no body in the tomb, because there was no body in the tomb. Remember, it was a very specific tomb with its own garden. It wasn't the sort of tomb that you would easily get lost. And even in the worst cases, you know what it's like when you park your car in a multi-story car park and you forget where you put it, you forget which level, which place and all that sort of thing. It wasn't even as complicated as that. But even in those cases, eventually you find your car, don't you? But actually, it was a very specific tomb near to where Jesus had died on the cross. And one that could easily be identified, and it was empty. There was nobody in it. We know that the Jews and the Romans never tried to say that Jesus' followers had gone to the wrong tomb. They never accused of that. They made up some other stories about how the body was stolen. They don't make sense either, but they never tried to pretend that it wasn't obvious that the tomb was empty. And it wasn't just Mary that saw it. Also, two disciples saw the empty tomb as well, didn't they? Can you remember their names? Anybody? Yes? Peter and John. And they have a bit of a running race. They go running towards the tomb. Now, who arrives first? Anybody know who gets there first? Yes. John gets there first. He doesn't actually name himself, but because of the way the book is written, it's most probably John who gets there first, and then Peter catches up, and Peter goes in. Why do you think John didn't go in? Anybody? John gets to the tomb. He doesn't go in. Peter's running, doesn't run as fast as John, but he gets there in a moment later, and he goes into the tomb. Got any thoughts? It's not a big question, but I just wonder why John doesn't go into the tomb. Maybe because he was scared. Maybe because it was a respect thing. They didn't want to go into a place where there were dead people. Maybe it was dark. Maybe he just thought before he did things. Some of you are like John. Some of you are like Peter, who generally speaking didn't think before he did things. But Peter goes in, he wants to know what's going on, so he steps inside and he sees that the tomb is empty. Well, not precisely empty. What was inside at this moment? Anyone remember? There were some material things made of material. Sorry?
Linen.
Thank you, Ben. There was some linen. There were the grave clothes that had been, well, what had been done with them? Anyone remember what had happened to the grave clothes that Jesus had been wearing? They were folded. Thank you. The adults are coming in now, big. You children have got to catch up, keep ahead. They're all folded up. And I suppose the fact that they were folded up, of course, it meant that Jesus didn't leave in a hurry. It meant that he had time to fold them, but it also means he didn't need them anymore. When you fold things up, generally speaking, unless you're an untidy person at home, when you fold things up and put them neatly, it's because you don't want to use them for a little while. And of course, Jesus didn't want to use his clothes again for being buried because he wasn't going to be buried again. So the burial clothes are all folded up because Jesus doesn't use them anymore. Peter's pretty confused. He's not really sure what to make of the empty tomb, is he? John, he's brave enough to go in after a while, and he looks at these things, and it says he believed. He looked at them, he thought, and he started to believe. Maybe he didn't understand everything, but it's now starting to work. The cogs are starting to whir in his head, and he's starting to think, I see how this is working out. It's just like Jesus said. And whenever people talk about Jesus being risen from the dead, the stone rolled away and the empty tomb are massive pieces of evidence. They're really big things. It's not a small thing, maybe because you're used to the idea of the empty tomb, you don't think much of it, but the empty tomb is a massive piece of evidence because there's no other explanation that's reasonable for the empty tomb other than some great miracle happened which made it possible for a dead man to come out of that tomb. The miracle of life, also the miracle of the stone being rolled away by the angels. John also squeezes in another bit of evidence that not so much is right there in front of them at that moment, but it's something that they should have thought about, the disciples and Mary, that they should have thought about. So I've got another egg with the other bit of evidence in, and it looks like that. Anyone over here want to open that one? Oh, what's that got in there? Do you want to pull it a bit harder? I'll just get my little controller thing. I can show everybody else what's in there. It's a little booklet. And this is a great little booklet for adults or children. But it has a little timeline on it of from there's creation on the left there, right through to Nehemiah and a bit on till the coming of Jesus. Do you want to keep that? And we'll have the egg back a bit later. John says they hadn't quite worked out from the scriptures that Jesus had to rise from the dead. So John's looking and believing, and he hadn't quite worked it out, but it's beginning to work it out. But another massive piece of evidence that they should have thought about is that the whole of the Bible leading up to the point that Jesus is born had been talking to them about the coming of a king and the fact that he would die and rise again. So that's another bit of evidence that John just kind of squeezes in there for us to think about. There's the stone, there's the empty tomb. There's actually the whole of the scriptures up to that point, all that God had been saying, all the words that God had been giving his people. But there's one really massive, massive piece of evidence that we've got to do yet. Here we go. This is my biggest egg. Oh, was there a little ooh-ah went on there? Looks like that. We choose Nathan, who's a bit further back. Massive piece of evidence. I wonder if we can work out what it is from that. Do you want to open it and have a look? Is it? Careful. Now, what's in there? People. Lots of people. So I just grab some of them. As soon as you're sitting with your parents, you can have some to... You can keep that, hold of that for a bit. There we go. So the other massive bit of evidence... Anyone want to tell me what it is? It's Jesus appearing to some people. I don't know if I'm organized enough to put these here. There we go. Sometimes we call them the witnesses. Jesus appeared, he showed himself to people. So there was the empty tomb, and there was the fact that it had been predicted in the Bible. But the really massive, massive, massive piece of evidence to Jesus risen from the dead is that people actually saw him. If there'd just been an empty tomb, we'd still be making up explanations. But there wasn't just an empty tomb. There was a person seen in the flesh. We're going to look at Mary today, this morning, and then in some other weeks we're going to look at some other people who saw Jesus after he'd risen from the dead. But it starts with Mary. You'll remember Mary was crying. She bends over to look into the tomb and she sees two angels. Don't know if they were there before but weren't seen, or whether they just arrived in the tomb. Remember, angels can move around at will. They're not limited in bodies like we are. But there's two angels in there. Maybe they were the two angels or the angel that rolled the stone away. And they ask Mary Magdalene, why is she crying? They want to get her to articulate really her sense of complete loss. And she says she's crying because the body's gone and she doesn't know where it is, and she's so upset by that. And there's a man standing there. And she thinks he's the gardener. And he asks her the same question as the angels. And she explains again. And Jesus says just one more word to her. What does Mary say? Sorry, Jesus say to Mary? One of the children? What does Jesus? Yes? Mary. He says, Mary. Why does he say Mary? Yes? You can't remember? It's a really obvious answer. It's probably the one you thought of, yes? Because it's her name. Absolutely. Do you know everyone's name in the world? No, I don't either. Generally, you only know people's names if you know them. So, if nothing else, Jesus, in saying her name, immediately, he must know her. And not only does he say her name like he knows her, he must say it like he knows her, and she recognizes his voice, doesn't she? So he says, Mary, and she says, Rabboni. John kind of gives us the word in Aramaic, the language they were speaking, and the language of the Bible as well. It gives us in both, kind of Rabboni, which means teacher, because he wants to kind of give us a sense of being there, that we actually kind of hear Rabboni. We can imagine that was actually what she said with great emotion, I no doubt. It's really you. You're alive. And Jesus says, don't hold on to me. I haven't yet ascended to my Father. Things are different now. I'm on my way back. I'm on a journey to heaven where you can follow. And you need to tell the disciples, not just that I'm alive, she did need to tell them that, and the other women would tell that too, but not just tell the disciples that I'm alive, but also that I'm on a journey. Did you notice that? He says something quite funny. He doesn't just say, tell them I'm alive. He says, go and tell them I am returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. You see, what Jesus says to Mary is not just, I recognize you. He says, this is the beginning of the explanation about what Easter means. Here we go. Easter means God is now your Father and your friend. And I'm on a journey. This is Jesus. I'm on a journey to my Father, who, guess what, is also your Father. To my God, God the Father, who is also your God. And you know what? That's only possible now because of the death of Jesus. And I'm now risen and I'm on this journey, and you can follow me too. It's not going to be like it was before. I am risen. I am back alive again, But it's not the same because I'm not staying here. I'm not back to be with you in that way, physically there with you. I am returning to the Father. It's not going to be the same. It's going to be better. So where does the evidence lead us this morning? Jesus is risen from the dead. Jesus is alive again, and he's on his way to the Father in heaven. And more than that, we've got the last egg, which is because of that, something special is going to happen. Who wants to open the last egg? I think Tom, you put your hand up quite a few times, so you can do that one. This is a much more obvious thing to have in an egg. It's not chocolate. It's a chick. Yeah. Now, I'm not particularly into Easter eggs and all that kind of stuff, but if nothing else, a chick helps us think about new life, doesn't it? It's a birth of a new being. And because of Jesus risen from the dead, then any of us can have new life. That's what Jesus says when he says about returning to the Father. It's not just that he's risen from the dead. That's great. That's an amazing spectacle. That's a great piece of history. But it's just kind of there 2,000 years ago and doesn't mean anything unless it connects with your life now, this morning. And the great thing is that it does. It connects in this way that because Jesus has risen, you can have new life, life from the dead. It means that you follow the journey that Jesus went on. If Jesus doesn't come back soon, then we will die. And like Jesus, we will be in a grave somewhere, in a tomb somewhere. We will be buried somewhere. But because Jesus rose from the dead, like Jesus, we will be resurrected. We will be made alive again. Our spirits will be reunited to our bodies, new bodies, and we will live again, never to die. We will be given new life. And we start feeling the benefit of that life now. It's what we call eternal life, starting now. But we will experience it fully in the future at what we call the resurrection, when everybody will rise. At this moment in John's Gospel, I guess it's pretty much two people, or maybe a couple of other ladies, two people believing. There's John starting to believe, and there's Mary. And they both become gospel tellers. And they don't just say the fact that Jesus rose, they say what it means. Question for you this morning then. Do you believe that Jesus rose from the dead? It starts there. Do you believe that Jesus rose from the dead? Or are you still looking for him in the tomb? Are you still kind of looking for explanations about what happened that avoids the obvious, which is that Jesus really has risen from the dead? Maybe you think the church is kind of in the tomb. The church is kind of a dead thing, a lifeless thing, a historical thing. David Cameron got together some church or some religious leaders, Christian sort of leaders, people, just before Easter. And in his speech, he said some good things about Jesus, but he really just ended up talking about the legacy of Jesus as though it was something in the past, although he kind of just set as an example and made a sacrifice. And that will be kind of mildly interesting. But if Jesus really rose from the dead, and it's far more than interesting, it's completely life-changing. So do you believe that Jesus rose from the dead? And if you're a believer this morning, whatever age you are, if you really believe that Jesus rose from the dead, are you going to be like John, who writes this book for us, or like Mary Magdalene, who goes and tells the other disciples what she's seen? Are you going to be a gospel teller? You haven't seen Jesus risen from the dead, but you've read all the stories of the witnesses, and you've got a story to tell. You've got the story of the witnesses, you've got the story of what it means to you. Are you going to be like them, a gospel teller? Easter Sunday morning is a great morning to say, I need to be a bit more enthusiastic. I need to be much more excited about Jesus risen from the dead. I need to be in a constant state of excitement like Mary Magdalene and John, who are running to tell the good news that Jesus is risen. And we need to think hard about how we make that relevant, how we connect it to people's lives. But it absolutely does, because everybody dies. And everybody needs eternal life. So you're going to be a gospel teller. You're going to tell people the good news that Jesus is risen from the dead. And this morning, do you have great joy that Jesus risen from the dead does mean new life for you? It's so moving, I think, those words where Jesus says, I'm returning to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. I kind of read them a few times this week, and I kind of got a bit captivated, if that's the word, by those, that expression about my Father and your Father. Just connecting us, just in just a few words. It's just an amazing connection to make. It's almost Jesus kind of casually says, my Father, your Father. This is the maker of the universe, the one who owns everything, who both made it and owns it and controls it and sustains it, and the one who's the author of history and the one we all have to answer, is our Father in Jesus. Are you pleased? Are you excited? Are you delighted by that this morning? It's the great joy of Easter. There is a brilliant new Bruce Springsteen album. Buy it online or however else you buy albums. I think it's really good. And there's a couple of tracks on there where there's a saxophonist called Clarence Clemons who's playing. And those of you who are Bruce Springsteen fans or followers would know that he actually died last summer. And so I suppose they've remixed the tracks or done some new tracks and somehow sampled some of his saxophone playing from the past or something like that. And it's a way of kind of this man who died living on. And they're great saxophone solos. There's one particular song, I can't remember what it's called now, but anyway, it has this repetition about this train. It's a great solo. And there's a moving but slightly rude as in expletives in it, tribute on the back of the album to Clarence Clemons by Bruce Springsteen. And the best he can do as he ends, you know, he says he was a great bloke and, you know, we rocked all these cities and it was all wonderful and everything else. And I'm sure it was great fun. I know it's all kind of a show, but you look at Bruce Springsteen shows and you think it's all great fun. They seem to be having such a great time and interacting and everything else. And he says all that and then he says something like, you know, his music will live on with us. And really, he'll only die when we die. And it's a moving tribute, and you're kind of with him in it, but you just get to the end and you think, is that it, really? Is that really the best we can offer someone? A tribute on an album track? The fact that their music kind of lives on because we can sample it 1,000 times and replay it? The fact that some people remember you? Is that really the best? Is that the best that our life kind of amounts to? For most of us, we won't even be remembered because we weren't great saxophone players. Most of us will not be remembered beyond a couple of generations. Is that the best we can offer people? Easter Sunday morning says, that's nothing. Do you want to follow Jesus Christ to his Father, who can be your Father? Do you want eternal life of a quality and duration that you cannot imagine? That's the story of Easter. That's what we're excited about. That's what we want to tell people about. God grant us the grace to really understand and to be really enthusiastic about it. Amen.